Let's open up to Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. Thank you. Yesterday, we studied the sugya of Eldad Umeida. Do you remember that? But I looked it over, and I think that we can do a more adequate job. So with your permission, let's do a chazara. But I think we'll be able to add, and especially the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi has something fascinating in terms of this whole sugi. So we started yesterday with Tanu Rabbanan. And that was, I think, that's 7 lines down from the top. What do we say? 1, 2, 3, 6 lines down from the top. Excellent. Now, the Braisa is going to offer 2 interpretations of the Pasuk. Vaisharu shnei anoshim v'machane, which means that Eldad Umedad remained in the machane. The other candidates for the Sanhedrin, meaning the other Kenim, let's call them 68 Kenim strong, they were prophesizing only within the close proximity of the Ohel Moed. And this is based on the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was situated in the Ohel Moed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands him to gather together 70 people of the Zkeni Yisrael. They should be Saviv Ohel Moed. They should surround the Ohel Moed. The purpose and the goal of this new body called the Sanhedrin was to Yisu Imo B'masa Ha'am. They should share with Moshe Rabbeinu the burden of leadership and deciding in adjudications and so forth in the law. And what happens is that because of the close proximity of the Zkenim to Moshe Rabbeinu in the Ohel Moed, and because Moshe Rabbeinu had Hashras Hashchina, somehow that Ruach, that divine spirit, expanded and it penetrated the 70s Canaan. What's the Chiddush here of Eldad Umeidad? They remained in the Machne. They didn't. They weren't gravitationally pulled towards the Ohel Moed like the other 68 were. And again, we're going to have a whole discussion why they remained behind in the Ohel Moed. But the Torah tells us that even though they were not in the Ohel Moed or anywhere near the Ohel Moed, they were back in the Machne. Nevertheless, they were prophesizing. And that prophecy, as we'll soon see, was superior to the prophecy of the 70 Zekanim, the other 68, I mean. The other 68 had a temporary prophecy. They were able to receive the Ruach as it spread from Moshe Rabbeinu throughout the Ohel Moed and around the Ohel Moed. And that was only temporary. Once they left that in those environs and they were no longer in close proximity to Moshe Rabbeinu, to the Ohel Moed, they ceased to prophesy. But Eldad Umeidad continued to prophesy even though they were in the Machne.
What were they prophesying?
And there are 3 opinions.
What's the difference? If Moshe's job to do the prophesying.
The difference is that sometimes you get like I don't know if you've ever had this, Yaakov, a very inspiring moment, but then 5 minutes later, you know, it dissipates. It's like the moon, you know, it waxes and then it wanes. Yeah. So that was the situation of 68 out of 70 of this Canaan. They had a momentary inspiration. They were in close proximity to Moshe Rabbeinu and the Ohel Moed. They were designated and appointed to the Sanhedrin Agdola. They would now participate with Moshe Rabbeinu in leading the people. At that moment, they had the status of Nevi'im, of prophets. Once they joined Klal Yisrael in the Machne, they ceased to be Nevi'im. It was a momentary inspiration. Not so in the case of Eldad Umeidad. They had acquired a permanent status of Nevi'im, and the difference is that even if they were not in close proximity to Moshe Rabbeinu, they were not in the Sviv Ohel Moed, they were in the Machne, nevertheless, they would prophesize. Now, we have a Chumash somewhere here on the table, I think. Maybe, Yasha, I could trouble you to open up to the parsha, and we're looking at Bamidbar Yud Aleph, Pasuk Chav Vav. Is there another chumash here? There should be one right behind you, Steve. Maybe in one of those five. No, there's nobody. You could.
I have trouble looking at those because they're all mixed up.
They're all mixed up. Yeah, somehow there was a.
I can never find it. Yeah.
There's a word you didn't know last week.
Oh, okay, thanks. So this is Perek Yud Aleph, and we said it was Pasuk Chavav. So it says here that Vayotzel min haruach hasher olav. This is something very similar to a parsha in Nach about Elisha and Eliyahu. But anyway, here it says Vayotzel. It's sort of spread. It radiates from the ruach hasher olav, the ruach on Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayitain, and this ruach now it hovers over the shivim ish haskein. And the pasuk says the following: Vayehi. It's on page 365. If that helps you. Vayehi kinoach aleihem haruach, when the spirit, the divine spirit, rests on the shivim's kenim, vayisnavu, they were able to prophesy. Velo yasafu. So we'll have a whole discussion about those two words, velo yasafu. And the final conclusion is going to be velo yasafu means that that nevuah did not continue. But vayisharu shnei anoshim b'mach. Now we have two members of this group of Nevi'im, and they remained in the Machne. We have to understand why they remained in the Machne, but the Torah says about them, Vatonach aleihem haruach. It means that they had the same ruach, but even in the Machne. With regard to the balance of the 70 Zekenim, they only had the ruach where? In the Olam Moed, in close proximity to Moshe. Now we're in the Machne, which is at a great distance from the Olam Moed, and yet, nevertheless, Vatonach aleihem haruach, Vayisnavu b'machne, and then they had nevuah, and then the Torah describes Yoshua, who's running over to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he's saying, Eldad umeda misnavu b'machne, and this is not something that we can accept, and we have to figure out why Yoshua was so upset with the fact that Eldad umeda were prophesizing in the machne. And then the final pasuk that we have to see is pasuk Chav Ches. It says, "Vayan Yoshua benun Mishois Moshe mibchura vayomar Adoni Moshe klaim." And we'll have to spend a lot of time to figure that out. Now, the first point that we want to make today, which we did not see yesterday, is that Moshe Rabbeinu is in a quandary as to how to come up with the number 70. Because now, listen carefully. Moshe Rabbeinu gets a tzivui from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to appoint Zkenim from 12 Shvatim. Do you follow Rabbosa what's going on over here? It means all the 12 Shvatim, each one of them, have to be represented on the High Court.
You can't do it unless you do fractions.
Exactly. Lefichach, im hayanotel shisha mikol shevet. If he would take 6 from each Shevet, then you end up with 72. So you have a surplus of 2. But here's the question. Hareli achar shenechlak Shevet Yosef lishnayim, right, at the end of Sefer Breishis, Yosef is split into 2. There's going to be Ephraim and Menashe. So at the end of the day, we have 13 Shvatim. That would complicate the tzivui. The tzivui that Moshe received was to divide up the members of the court amongst 12 shvatim. What happened with Ephraim and Menashe? Why aren't they included as 2 shvatim? So again, I was unaware of a sugya in Masechta Horios, which he quotes here in the footnote. Maybe you have it in your footnotes, I don't know. And he says the following. This is really a lomdusha sugya. That Chalukas Shevet Yosef L'shtayim was only relevant to Nachla be'Eretz Yisrael, number one, to divvy up the territory of Israel. So we're going to divide up Shevet Yosef into 2 different territories for Ephraim and Menashe respectively. And then for Degolim, that there was a mitzvah of Degolim. Each Shevet had its own Degel. And in the case of Yosef, there would be two Degolim, one for Ephraim, one for Menashe, and Nesiim. Every Shevet had to have its own Nasi. In the case of Yosef, there would be two Nesiim, one for Ephraim and the other for Menashe. Aval Lishar Dvarim, but as far as everything else is concerned, with the exception of Nachla, Degolim, and Nesiim, Harei Hu Keshevet Echad, it's like one Shevet. And the Nafkamina is going to be when Moshe Rabbeinu is given the command to represent on the court all of the Shvatim. It's only going to be 12 Shvatim, meaning Yosef is going to be considered one Shevet. Ephraim Umenashe is one indivisible Shevet. That's one approach. And that's based on a sugya in Horios on Daf Vav Amid Beis. However, the Achronim say the following, that in truth, it's quite possible that Yosef was divided into two Shvatim. Both Ephraim and Menashe had to have equal representation on the Sanhedrin. Then you'll ask me, if that be the case, the number is what? 13 and not 12. Nay, we have to subtract Levi. Now, why do we subtract Levi? What do we have against Levi? Why can't Levi have representatives on the court? So you ready for this one? Are you ready for this? This will blow you out of the water. I mean, unbelievable. Levi, according to this school of thought, would not be represented on the Sanhedrin. And why? Because the Torah says that who are these Shivim's Kenim? Let me read to you a much earlier pasuk in the same chapter. This is pasuk Tezayin. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Esfo li Shivim ish mizikne Yisrael. Now listen to this. Asher yodata ki heim ziknei ha'am vishotrov. There's an extra word, vishotrov. That word vishotrov, which literally translates as policeman, is an additional qualification or a condition to qualify for ziknei Yisrael of Shivim Zgenim. Now, there are two questions that we want to ask. Question number one is, why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling Moshe to choose from the Shotrim? And secondly, why are the Levim excluded? Right, we're going according to Numa Halach here, that Shevet Yosef is split into two, Ephraim and Menashe, and yet Levi is not represented. Why? Because it says Vishotrov? So listen to this. The Medrash says that Kavanas Akosifi, why do you have to be amongst the Shotrim to qualify for the 70s Kedim for the Sanhedrin? The Elu Shahayu Shotrim b'Mitzrayim. You know, usually when you talk about Shotrim amongst the Jewish people, you know, I don't want to use the word capos, if you know what I mean, because that's a very negative term. Here, it's Lamal Yusa. Why? Because what did the Shotrim do instead of doing what the Mitzrayim required them to do to beat up the Jews? Huku, they accepted the blows on their own shoulders, Verichamu, and they had Rachmanis on Bnei Yisrael. Now, Rabbo said, we're talking about a whole different qualification for Sanhedrin. Until now, we've been talking about intellectual qualifications. Now, we're talking about a moral qualification. And that is the tremendous Mesirus Nefesh and the Rachmanus of the Shotrim, who received the blows of the Mitzvah because they refused to beat up the Jews. Now, excellent. Ulafichach lo yochal Moshe lito mishevet Levi. Levi cannot be represented on the court. Again, I don't know if there are any Levim in the audience today. I mean, we don't have too many Levim here in the Avic Learning Center, so it's a kind of rare commodity. But this sounds like an insult to the Levim, that the Levim could not be part of the Beis Nagol. Shareihem lo nishtabdu b'Mitzrayim v'lo asu mehem shotrim. In other words, it was only amongst those who were out there in the fields who were chosen, probably by the Mitzvah themselves, to be the Shotrim. But in any event, the Levim were not the Shotrim. But this is an unbelievable Kiddush. I mean, wow.
Are they applied to Hegel, then they act as a Shotrim. Hashem said, you know, arm yourselves, and the Levim were the ones who carried out.
Right, but that's not what we're talking about here. Here we're talking about something early in the history of the 40 years.
Still acted as, in a way, as an enforcer, as a
right. But that's not what you call you know, rachmanus. You know what I'm saying? On the contrary, that's using the midah rachmanus and turning it into gvura, if you follow what I mean. But pure rachmanus, yeah, Yaakov.
I think Elder of Medrash, if I remember from a midrash, that they got the effects of prophecy because of what you've said. They stood and got the beating.
Okay. According to this approach, again, there's so many different approaches, you never know what's right. But all of the Shivim Zekenim, by definition, had to have been those who accepted, who received the blows. Okay. So whatever it is, we have now, how many Shvatim? 12. What are those 12 Shvatim? That's going to be a Machlokas. It's either Yosef has one Shev and Levi has another, or it's Yosef has two Shvatim and Levi's out of the ballpark. Now we have a problem. Vayisharu shnei anoshim b'machne v'hem eldad u'meidad are left in the machne. They are not gravitationally pulled towards the ol moed together with the other zkenim. And they remained back in the machne. And what were they doing in the machne? They were prophesizing. Okay then? Now, Yesh Omrim, the first opinion in the Braisa, is going to be the following. This is what I call the Yira opinion. What do I mean by Yira? Why is it that the two people called Eldad Umeda did not come forward? Now keep in mind, the appointment of the Sanhedrin took place where? In the Ol Moed. And that's where Moshe Rabbeinu did what's called a Kalfi. They refused to participate in the Kalf. Why? Because of Yira. What were they afraid of? According to this Yesh Omrim, they were afraid of being rejected. Remember yesterday we had a whole discussion about fear of rejection, if you remember. That's the opinion of the Yesh Omrim. They remained behind because they were afraid that they would pick up the two, each one of them would pick respectively the two empty...
The blanks.
Excellent, the blanks. The blank Scrabble piece.
Yeah. That's very valuable, actually.
Yeah, right. But here it's not too valuable. You can get over the head because Ma'aseh HaKadosh Baruch Hu rejected you. So they were afraid of rejection. That's called Yira. And the impression we get from this sugya is that that's not laudable. On the contrary, we're going to have a second opinion of Rabbi Shimon that they didn't participate in the Kalfi. They remained behind, not out of Yira, but rather out of Hanova, out of humility. They felt they weren't roi to Sadehej. That's going to be a whole different approach, and they're considered the greats, and that's why they get Nevuah on a permanent basis. Now, the Braisa goes into all the nitty-gritty details about Moshe's confusion. Moshe had a problem that he had to solve as to how to achieve a fair division in which every Shevet would have an equal number of members on the court. So what I want to do with you now is I want to learn with you Yushalmi. Yushalmi asks the following question. Here in our Gemara, let's call it the Bavli, Moshe Rabbeinu's solution was that he would create 72 notes, two of which were blank. And those two that were blank would be excluded. So if we get six representatives of each of the Shvatim, the number becomes 72, am I correct? And two have to be excluded, they would pick up the blanks out of the 72 notes that were in the Kalfi. Good? The Yushalmi doesn't like it. Why? Harei im kol ha-shivim zkenim ha-rishonim ha-ya'ol of the other petek zakeim. What would be in the following case? And every possibility, again, we're not going into statistics here, but we have to take into consideration every possibility. Supposing the first 70 that put their hand into the Kalfi would each get the petek that said zakeim on it, that he was elected to the Sanhedrin. Then by definition, what's going to be left for the 71st and the 72nd? Blank notes. That's not fair. Hayishnayim achronim, yecholim liton, they can put forth a claim. Shehura kocham, they were left for last. Thalolonosar avuram, what was only left in the Kalfi, was Ptachim Chalokim, were blank Ptachim. It's very possible that if they would have been earlier on the list, if you follow what I mean, you know, there was a line. It was a, what do they call it in Britain? A Q? Is that the word? A Q. So there was a Q. How do you spell that word, by the way?
Q-U-E-U-E.
Oh my gosh. Forget about it. I'm not going to remember that. Anyway, so there was a long queue, and there were two fellas who were at the end of the queue. So they didn't push themselves forward. You know, it's like when a bus comes, you know. So people are waiting to get on the bus, and it's all crowds. So some people will push themselves from the back. So these last two, you know, after the first 70, they didn't want to push themselves up. So Hura Kocha, maybe if they would have been amongst the first 70, they would have gotten Zaken. So the Yushalmi now has to substitute a whole other pshat. So Yushalmi says the following. Kasav Moshe Rabbeinu Shivim V'Arba Ptochim. There were 74 notes. Al Shivim V'Shnayim Mehem. On 72, Kasav Zaken. The Al Shnayim Chalokim. They were blank. Umeata. Yachol hayakol echad min hazkenim lahalos biyodo petek zaken. Because how many ptokim do we have now that have zaken on it? 72. So even if you were the 71st or the 72nd online, you had the possibility of picking up the zaken. In other words, let's say the first 70 online, I'm sorry, the first, let's say, 68 online all picked up zaken. What's left in the mixture?
We have four
Zaken and two blanks, correct? Mm-hmm. So therefore there's a good chance that the 69th and 70th Zaken would pick up Zaken. And therefore, Me'ata Yochel Kol Echad Min Azkenim Lahalos B'yodo Petek Zaken. Everyone has an equal chance to get Zaken. Afim Hela Bachrona, even if he was last on the queue. But now again, Rabbi Osei, we're in trouble. Why? Because if there were 74 Ptokim that said Zaken on it, I'm sorry, if there were 74 Ptokim and there were 72 that had Zaken on it, then what's possible now?
Two extra.
That's right, that 72 would get Zaken. Just 1 second. What's ringing here? Something.
Sorry,
ringing?
It's me.
Yeah. Okay.
Trying to answer it.
Okay. Ma haya Moshe Oseh? What would Moshe do? Ilu haya kol shivim ushnayim azkenim malim biyodam petek zake. So you've solved one problem, but you've created another problem. So you solved the problem. Then now, every last zake, no matter where he is at the end of the queue, has a shot at zake. So he's not considered, how should I say, excluded, even though he's at the end of the line. But nevertheless, now you have the possibility that 72 would pick up Zaken. So the Yushalmi now comes up with a new answer. Maisa Nisim Hayu. There was a miracle here. And what happened? Mitchila Ola Petek Echad Zaken. The Echad Chalak. This is what we'll call Seirigin, if you follow me. You know, in the opposite sequence, right? One in a sequence, but one and then the opposite. Nimsa, Shekfar Arba Rishonim, Hotziu, Eshnei Haptokim Hachalokim. Just 1 second, let me get this again. Kloma, Shemitchila Ola Petak Echad Zokim. Oh, I see what happened. That, just 1 second, that the first two Zkenim that pulled out the Ptokim, they pulled out two Ptokim. In other words, there was some sort of miracle in which the two Ptokim, one said Zaken and one was blank, somehow cling to each other. They linked up, and therefore, when the first four picked up their ptokim, is hotziu eshnei ptokim achalokim. Just 1 second. So they already removed. So the first four, and they took out the Shnei Ptokim Chalokim. So I say, how does that solve the problem? Just give me a second. I'm sorry. I thought I had it. So again, if Moshe, there's a possibility that 72 would be Mala Biyodom Peta Pet Petek Zog. Tamaisa Nisim Hoikom Shemitchila Oya Ola Petak Echod Zokin Fi Echod Chalak. And therefore what? In the first four, so they already took out, they took out six Ptokim, including two Chalokim and four Zkenim. So if they took out four Zkenim, then we're left with what would, again, the original number we said was 74. Am I correct according to the Yishalmi? Let me just go over this one more. Do we have it? Ah, Shivim V'arba Ptokim. So there were 74. Now the first four picked up Zokim, and amongst them also the two that were Chalak. So we're left with now, so if we take six, so we're left with 68 Ptokim, correct? And how many Zkenim are we left with? Just one second. First four, so we're left with 66. And we took out four. Just one second. We took out four from 74. So we're left with 70. So we're left with 70. And now, just one second, we took out four. Ah! We took out six, right? Not four, because two of them had an attachment of Chalokim. So at the end, we took out six. So how many are we left with? If we subtract six from 74, we're left with 68. Oh, so if we're left with 68, so now we have 68 Ptokim. Just one second, we took out four. No, we're left with 68. That's four. We're left with, just one second. I'm just going to give it one more shot. Again, what we had is 74, and two of them with that, so we have 72. But if the first four, so why does that solve, how does that solve your problem? If the first four, you're all talking Echod Zokin, you're all talking Echod Zokin, Echod Chala. Oh, so let's see if the first four, so we had two Chalokim, so what we're left with is 70 Ptokim, and what happened, and now, so we're left with 70 Ptokim, and how many Zkenim are we left with? Just one second, two of them, 68, but how does that solve the problem? One second, I'm not sure what happened here. There was Maisa Nisim. Well, what was the Maisa Nisim? So Mitchila Ola Petak Echad Zokim the Echad Chalak. Okay, it's Mitzvah Shekvar Barbar Rishonim Hotziu et Shnei Aptokim HaChalokim. And now we're left with what? We're left with 70. But again, if see the first four. So wait a minute. So two out of those four were Zokin. So two out of the four were Zokin, and you're left with 70 Ptokin, and you still have 68. I'm not sure how. I thought I had it, but
why didn't they just put six in, and then the first four, then the four do it, and then put another four in, the next four. Then you always have. Because otherwise everybody has to, I understand why the Kalfi is, did everybody have to take, or only until the two?
In order to be elected, you have to pick up a petek that said Zokin on it, correct?
Right.
So now we have the following problem. Let's go over the Yushalmi's problem. If there are, let's say, 72 Ptokim, two of which are Chalokim, correct? So that's the Bav.
Right.
So now, if let's say the first 70 pick up the 70 Zokin, so then the other two who haven't yet picked up, they're left with no choice.
Right.
And it's just a fluke that by By accident, they turn out to be excluded because they were this. So how does Yushalmi solve that problem? So Yushalmi says that there were, that it's not that there were 72 Ptakiyu, but rather it was 74, which I understand, therefore, that even if, let's say, even if the first 70 picked up Zaken, there's still four left, two of which say Zaken on it. But then you have another problem. Then there's a possibility that 72, one second, because 12 Shvatim times 6 gives you 72, so there's still a surplus of two. So somehow there was a Maisa Nisim that although the last two Zakenim had a shot at being elected, so they weren't excluded because they weren't amongst the first 70, but nevertheless, they would pick up the empty Ptah. But I don't know how to fit it into the language here. Okay, let's just leave this for the time being. But what's exciting to me is that the Yerushalmi is not satisfied with the Bavli because of that reason. Okay, now that the Meiri has another problem. The Meiri asks the following. Why was it necessary for Moshe Rabbeinu to have a goral amongst the 72 Zkenim, which led him to the problem that he can only appoint 70 and we have to exclude two, and that's where he came up with the Chalokim. Hare yochol hoya Moshe Rabbeinu lasos goral ben ha-shvatim v'al yidei sheyitol shneim asar p'tokim, let him take 12 p'tokim, al asara mehem, on 10 out of the 12 he'll write Shisha's Kenim, and on 2 P'tokim he'll write Chamisha's Kenim. So if, for example, a particular Shevet picks up a Petek that says Chamisha's Kenim, that means that Hashem wants only 5 representatives from that Shevet. When we call Shevet Yivrar, this is the Meiri, Misparas Kenim and Echtob B'Petek. So you'd have 10 Shvatim that would have chosen a Petek that says 6, so we're left with 60 Zkenim. Just 1 second. If ten Shvatim picked up the number 6, then you have 60, and then 2 Shvatim would pick up the number 5. So the Meiri says, Imaya Osaka, why did Moshe avail himself of that possibility? Hoya Bazet El Bon Lechol Shevet. In other words, it's one thing to turn down an individual, it's another thing to insult a Shevet in comparison to the other Shvatim, that you guys are only going to get 5 representatives instead of 6. He chose 6 candidates from each Shevet. Now the insult would be limited to those 2 Zkenim. In other words, it's not a reflection on the Shevet, it's a reflection on those individuals. So that would sort of cut down the damages. And now, again, according to this whole interpretation, we begin to appreciate why it says in the Pasuk, Vaisharu Shnei Anashim. Where is it? Bamachne Shema Ha'echad Eldad V'Shema Sheni Meidad V'Tonach Aleim Aruah V'Hema Baksuvim. So what does it mean, Vehema Baksuvim? Hema Baksuvim means that the last 2 Ptakim that were left in the Kalfi, which weren't picked up by Eldad Umeidad, had the word Zaken on them. Again, they, Eldad Umeidad, were afraid that maybe they would end up with each one a Petek that was Chalak, that was blank. But in fact, what happened was, out of the first 68, just 1 second, 2 of them had already picked up Chalak and they were excluded.
For 70.
So what's left in the Kalfi?
Everything's good.
2 that say Zaken on it. And those 2 were meant for Eldad Umeidad. But they hadn't picked it up. So now we understand.
They were guaranteed.
Right. Vehema Baksuvim. Meaning they were written in the Ptakim. That's what the Pasuk means. Okay. Then the Gemara has a whole equation, an analogy to the case of transferring the Kedusha of the Bechorim, which would require either a pidyon of Mammon, of five shkolim, or alternatively a pidyon of a Levi for each one of the Bechorim. The problem is that although there were 22,000 Levim, there were 22,273 Bechorim. So 273 would not have the possibility of being replaced by a Levi, so there's no pidyon, so they would have to be poded with five shlum. How are we going to isolate those 273? And once again, we're going to go through the same structure of what? Of Kalfi. So, Heviu, Esrim, Ushnaim, Alofim, Piskin, Kovalim, Ben Levi. So, on 22,000 of the notes, it would say Ben Levi, that means you're going to be replaced by a Levi. And on 273 Ptokim, it would say Hamisha Shkom. Fine. So all this is the Yesh Omrim, and now we get to Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that Eldad Umeidad were inhibited from taking out of the Kalfi for an entirely different reason. Not because of Yira, but rather because of Anova. Because they declared Einon Ru'uyim Li'osa Gedul, an Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and God says that since you are exemplary in your humility, therefore you will get a permanent nevuah. That's a great blessing from Hashem. Just one second. Oh, so let me just point out that Marsha makes an interesting comment here that Lo hiniach al es haptokim achalokim kemoli el gabi askenim. So the Marsha is bothered by the following question. In the case of the Bechorim, The Gemara establishes, the Brisa establishes, that on 273 Ptokim it said Chamisha Shkolim. Why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu simply leave those 273 Ptokim blank, just like in the case of the Zakenim? If you picked up a blank, it meant that you weren't going to be a Zaken. Here, if you picked up a blank, it means there was no Ben Levi who would replace you and effectuate the pidyon. So Marsha says the following, that if Moshe Rabbeinu would have left the Ptokim blank, then if a Bechor picked up a Petek Chalak, a blank, he would claim that it doesn't mean that he has to give five Slaim, but rather it means that I remain as a Bechor, with my Kedushas Bechor. Meaning, there are those who have to be replaced by the 22,000, and the lucky ones don't have to be replaced at all. They can continue.
So they've done well.
And they've done well. So therefore he had to write on them Chamisha Shkolim. There was no one amongst the Bechorim who would be allowed to remain B'Kedushas Bechora, and he would have one or two choices. And if it said on a Chamisha Shkolim, that was his only choice. Okay, fine. That's the Marsha which I wanted to share with you. Now, according to Rav Shimon, the motivation here is not Yira, but when it says in the Pasuk, just one second. So the Pasuk says the following, Vayisharu shnei anoshim b'machne. And then the Pasuk says, V'lo yatsu ha'ohela. What does it mean, lo yatsu ha'ohela? So that clarifies that Nisharu b'machne, they didn't go out to the Ohel. Fine, so the Pasuk says they remained in the Ohel, which is in the Machne, and they refused to participate in the Kalfi, in the Ohel Moed. According to Tanakama, it wasn't because of Anov, because of Yira, because they were afraid of being booshed out, of being embarrassed if they got a chalak. So therefore, Vayisharu What the word Vaisharu means is Nisharu Pitkeim Bekalfi. That in fact they had two Ptakim that were left over in the Kalfi. Now, according to Rav Shimon, who holds that the reason why they remained in the Machne is because of Anov of humility, She'enam Re'uyim Liosa Gedula, so then the word Vaisharu means Mesim Atzmo Kishirayim. Vaisharu means they made themselves like the leftovers, meaning they don't deserve to be in the original. And then he quotes the Yad Ramah, who says that according to Rav Shimon, Lo Nisharu Ptakim Ksuvim Bekalfi, Me'achas Shekol Shimon Haskeim Shalchu Ola B'yodam Petak Zokein, the Eldad Umeida Lorotzu Lotzeis Lekalfi, Me'achas Shechoshu Shema Yala B'yodam Petak Zokein. So according to Rabbi Shimon, why didn't they want to participate in the Lekicha of the Ptakim and the Kalfi? Not because they were afraid that they would get a blank, but on the contrary, they were afraid they would get a Petek Zaken. Nimtza, Shekol Shivim Ushnaim Azkenim, Shebiraru Moshe Nisnabu. So again, Moshe Rabbeinu chose 72 Zkenim, right? Because he wanted to have an equal representation, 6 from each Shevet. So what happens now? So you had 72 Ptakim, Kol Shivim Zkenim Shaholchu, Ola B'yodam Petek Zaken. So according to the Yad Ramah, it comes out that out of the 72 Ptakim, 70 were picked up and they all had the word Zokin on it. So that, if I understand the Yad Ramah correctly, again, Be'eravon Mugbal, but I'm just saying, it sounds like Eldad Umeidad were not chosen to be amongst the 70 Zakenim, but yet paradoxically, they got an even greater level than the Shivim Zakenim. The Shivim Zakenim had a temporary Nevuah, they had a permanent Nevuah.
So were there two blanks left over there?
And there were two blanks left over.
So that's like Menashemayim, that they have to be at the end.
And Hashem really, in a sense, what's the word I want to use? Hashem granted their wish. That's the phrase I wanted to use. Their wish was that they would not be chosen because they felt they weren't royal lekach. So Hashem said, "If so, we're gonna allow you to remain behind." And now Vaisharu means Mesim Atzmon Kishirayim, and they were not part of the Kalfi. Had they collected from the Kalfi, they would have gotten a petek, a chalak, which is exactly what they wanted. But there was no need for that because the 70s came and actually picked up the 70 ptakim that said Zokin on it. Which means that all 72 Zkenim that Moshe had elected as candidates, they all were Nevi'im. Yeah. The difference is that 70 out of them were elected to the Sanhedrin and they lost their Nevuah. It was only temporary. Two of them were not elected to the Sanhedrin because they didn't want to be part of the Sanhedrin. They felt they weren't Roy, but on the other hand, paradoxically, they were granted a Nevuah Olamis, right? A permanent Nevuah. So that's what comes out according to
Rashi. So then you didn't need the whole lottery. You didn't need it then. Everybody's included.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if I know what you mean. We didn't need it. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu did not know that, right, two of them would not come, come forward, and that they would get the...
It was a process. Yeah, of course.
Right. Okay. Now, we go on to the second part. And that is, what were Eldad Umeidad doing in the Machna? They were prophesizing about what? So remember, the Braisa has three answers to the question, Ma Nevuah Nisnabu.
Moshe's eventual end.
Okay, so the first answer in the Gemara when it says Eldad Umeda Misnabim B'machne, is that we take the word Misnabim and we split it into two. So you separate the first two letters from the last five letters, and what it reads Mes Nivi'am, which means that their Navi, meaning the Navi of Klal Yisrael, that's Moshe Rabbeinu, would die. The Balaturim in Parshas Baloscha says that Misnabim is no trikun. In other words, every letter of the word Misnabim is the beginning of a word. So the Mem is Moshe, the Tav is Tanuach, right? Like that we say that when a person dies, he reaches his Menucha, they call it in English his repose, and then it says Nun, which is Nafsho, so Tanuach Nafsho, so Moshe Tanuach Nafsho. The Beis is Began, the Aleph is Elokim, that Moshe will go to the next world, Gan Elokim it's called, the world to come, and then the Yud and the Mem at the end is Yoshua Machnisam, but Yoshua will take them into the land.
Who says that?
This is the Balaturim.
Wow, he's amazing.
You know, Balaturim is famous for Neltrikins and Gematrios and so forth. So he takes the word Misnabim and it means Moshe Tanuach Nafsho, Began Elokim, and Yoshua Machnisam. Okay, so that's the first opinion in this Brisa, that Moshe, they prophesied that Moshe would die and Yoshua would take them into the land. Then we have the second opinion. And that was the Slav. Now the reason for Slav here is because the Parsha of Slav is the very next Parsha, straight afterwards, here in Balosma. And it says, Vayosef Moshe el Amachne, who is Zikne Yisrael, V'ruach Nasam Eis Hashem Vayogaz Slavim Min Hayom. Salvim Min Hayom. So we have the Slav. So they were testifying about the Slav. They were prophesizing. So if you take a look, there's a double language. It says, Ali Slav, Ali Slav. So the Ein Yaakov says that the reason for the double language is that, according to the Gemara in Erchin, the Slav actually came down on two different occasions. Okay, so that's...
Sorry, what's Ali Slav, Ali Slav? What's that?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Now we have the third opinion about Gog Umagog. So here I have a lot to share with you in the footnotes. Let's see. First of all, we have a comment here of Rashi. Dibra Maskil Al. Now, if you see, Rashi says, Al Iske Slav, Tzorech Shah Haysa.
I'm sorry, what
Al. I mean, it's hard. Al Iske Slav, it's about 50 lines down from the top. So, what does Rashi mean here when he says, Tzorech Shah Haysa? So, the Aruch HaNer says that what bothered Rashi was that it doesn't say in the Gemara, Minayin, how do we know that the prophecy was about Slav? Vushtet, I mean it says, Vaisnabu Bamachna, that's all it says, Misnabu Bamachna. Lachain, therefore, Rashi says, Shenevu Azu Litzarach Hashah, Share Miyadli Achari Kan Nizkar Bamikra Inyan Aslav. In other words, since the very next parsha is the Slav, Rashi calls that Tzorech Shah, meaning that if they're going to complain that they don't have enough food, so the Nevi'im are telling them, in this case Eldad Umeda, that don't worry about it, they'll get the Slav. That's called the Tzorech Shah, for the immediate future, immediate present, I guess you'd say. Then he adds that the Ein Yaakov says that Rashi was bothered. Why does it say Ali Slav? Halislav means that the slav should come up as if in a mandate, in a Lashon Tzivui. For lo Lashon Nevu, it should have said, Asid HaSlav Lalos. Lefichach Pirish Rashi Shaya Slav Tzorech Osa Shah. That since they really desperately needed the slav because of the complaints of the Jewish people, therefore the Navi commands the slav to arise. Now again, it's not that the Navi himself has the power to cause the slav to rest itself on the machne. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying Ali Slav, and that's called Tzorech Shah. Okay, now we get to the third opinion. That's Rav Nachman, I think. Al iske gogu magog hayu misnabim. Okay, so here he says the following. What was the substance of their nevuah, according to this third opinion? Melech hine melech olam min haaretz. A king is going to arise from the land shel magog. Okay, so magog is now a land, a certain territory, and that's going to happen b'sof hayomim, at the end of days. The osef melachim koshrek sarim v'sarei tzava lovshei shiryonim. In other words, there's going to be a massive military force that's going to come from Magog. It's going to be full of generals and army generals wearing the most protective gear, because Lovshei Shiryonim and the Koshrik Sarim, there'll be kings that wear crowns. V'chol ha'amim yishmu lo. And this Melech that comes from Magog will have such dominating power that all the nations will listen to what he has to say. And here's the scary part, my friends. The Archim Milchama Ba'aretz Shel Yisrael, and they will rise up to battle in the land of Israel. Now, the next part of their nevuah, I'm not sure I understand. There's some sort of metaphysical entity, a malach of Hashem, which is called Kiris Itimus. Muchan Lohem, and that's prepared for the people of the Jewish nation. Now, what does it mean, Muchan Lahem? I get the impression that this entity called Kiris Itimus is not one of our favorite buddies. You know, that this name is indicative of some sort of a power of evil. Why do I get that impression? Because so he says, Kiris Itimus Muchan B'shas Tzorosom, he was already designated at the moment of their suffering, the Horeg Kulam B'Srefas Neshama, somehow burning up their souls, V'Shalheves Esh Sheyotzeis Mitachas Kisei HaKavod, some sort of a fire that comes from the high throne of glory. V'noflim pigreim al harim shel eretz Yisrael. The dead bodies will fall on the mountaintops of Israel. V'avo kol chayos hasode v'tzipori hashamayim v'yochlu gufoseyem. V'achakach yichyu kol ha-mesim. It sounds like everyone's going to die, and then there's going to be tchias ha-mesim. V'yispanku min ahar shehutzna lahem min ha'aschola v'yikablu schar ma'aseihem. There's a lot of ambiguous words here. I don't know exactly what he means. Yispanku min ahar, somehow they'll roll down from the mountain, and that mountain was designated from the beginning, and then they're going to receive the reward for all their good deeds. And all this can be found in Targum Yonasan ben Uziel here in Parshas Baal Oscha. I don't have the Targum Yonasan in my Chumash here, but if you take a look in the big red Chumashim, you know, the what is called the Otsar Mefarshim, whatever it's called, you'll find the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel. Now he says the following. L'chola pirushim, what's common to all three explanations as to what the substance of the nevuah was, nisnabu shneim eldar umeidat bi'osa nevuah. That itself is a rarity, that you have two nevi'im coming up with the same nevuah. El shenechleku, the machlokas in the three interpretations, is what was the substance of the nevuah. Was it Moshe Mess? Was it Ali Slav? Or was it Gog u'Magog? However, the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel says that Eldad was the one who prophesied on the death of Moshe. Medad was the one who was misnabi on the Slav. Vishneim v'yachad hisnabu al Gog u'Magog. And apparently the reason for that is because in Yechezkel, if we go back to the pasuk, it says, Kol Amar Hashem Elokim, and it says, Ha'hem shanim, anavim bayom, right? Anavim bayom ha'hem shanim. And the Gemara says, Al tikri shanim el shnayim. So it sounds like they were both, and the Gemara says, Nevuah achas, they were both Eldad u'Medad, misnabe, the same identical Nevuah on Gog u'Magog. Which is pretty sharp, you know, when two different Nevi'im come up with the same exact Nevuah. And that's as far as the third interpretation is concerned. But Eldad was the one who was Nabi on Mace Moshe, Medad was the one who was Nabi on the Slav, and they both together was Nabi on Gog u'Magog. Now the Pasuk says, Nisnabu velo pasku. Velo yasafu. And the Gemara interprets velo yasafu means that right, it says the Shivim Zkenim. Let me read the pasuk again. Vayitein al Shivim Zkenim Haruach Asher Olav. Vayitein al Shivim Zkenim Vayihi Kinoach Aleim Haruach Vayisnabu V'lo Yasafu. So it says V'lo Yasafu, and that means pasku. The Gemara says that they the nevuah terminated.
They didn't continue.
So the Gemara says, are you deriving it from the fact that it says V'lo Yasafu? Which means that they didn't add anything, lo yasafu, they didn't lo sifu od lisnabo. He says, then if that be the case, what do we do with the kol shofar of Har Sinai? There too it says lo yasaf. And the Gemara assumes that the kol, that sound that they heard from the Shechina at Mamed Har Sinai would continue eternally. Kol ha-Shechina en posek li'olam. Now, what does it mean, kol Sinai lo pasak me'olam? So in the footnote here, he quotes the Toras Chaim. The Toras Chaim says, sha'inyan bazeh shekol ha'shechina shel matan Torah eino posek, shal yidei kein mamshich u'miskayim ha'shefa shel Torah Sheshpia Kodesh Baruch Hu Har Sinai B'Shas Matan Torah. So there's some sort of divine spirit or shefa. It's hard to translate the word shefa. Anybody have a translation of the word shefa?
Abundance.
A flow? Abundance? There's an abundance of some sort of a divine presence on Har Sinai at the time of Matan Torah, and that will continue even after Matan Torah. How do we benefit from this? Can we link up and connect with this? He says, "Kol osik b'Torah l'shem shamayim." Anyone who studies Torah for the right reasons, zoche lahavin ulahaskil b'Torah al yidei shefa zeh ke'ein ruach hakodesh. So when you and I learn Torah, and we do so in order to understand the Torah for the sake of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, then we're able to somehow link up to that Shefa, the original Ruach HaKodesh that came down in our Sinai, and it still exists. We can connect to it. So that's what we have. That's what we have in this sugya. So let's just see where we're up to, so we'll know where to pick it up tomorrow. Oh, so we have here a discussion about why Yehoshua gets upset, and we had two interpretations. One is because they were prophesying that Moshe Rabbeinu would die, but the Gemara is not clear as to why, according to the second and third interpretations, Yehoshua would be upset. I mean, if they're testifying about the Slav or about the ultimate Milchemes Gog u'Magog, why is that upsetting Yehoshua? And the Gemara says that it's like a Talmud Amora Holocha Uthnei Rabba. Now, yesterday I told you that I thought that the premise of this Gemara is that Nevuah is like a Horah. I don't think you have to say that, because the Gemara says Kid Talmud, you know, the Chaf Adimyon. The Gemara is just making an analogy that just like it's not appropriate, it's not respectful for a Talmud to paskin halacha in the presence of his Rebbe, so too it's not proper in the presence of the great Navi, the greatest of all Naviim, Moshe Rabbeinu, for Naviim to prophesize. So tomorrow, B'li Neder, we're going to start a new sugya that starts with the words Uminayin Lahavi Od Shlosha. So where is that? Just that we know where it is. It's up from the bottom.
Nine lines.
9 lines up from the bottom. The
last third of the
book. Okay then. So Blineta, that's what we'll do tomorrow. If anyone's interested, I have an even share in Sanhedrin at 10:15. Excuse me, at 10:30.
Oh, what?
I'm going to talk to you today about the sugya of a rotzeach b'shogeg in a situation where there is no kohen gadol. And in that situation, is it enough that ultimately, after he runs the Yer Miklat, they appoint a kohen gadol, and then he'll wait until that kohen gadol dies, and then he goes for you? Or no, if he wasn't already in office at the time of the ritzicha, then the rotzeach will have to remain in the Yer Miklat forever and ever, you know, until he dies.
Right.
So that's an interesting sugya which we'll have here in Sanhedrin. So we'll go through the Gemara in Sanhedrin, and then we'll take a look at the Mefarshim.
Get stuck in between the two.
So if you're around at 10:30, so B'li Neder will do that from 10:30 to 11:15. Okay, then everyone should have a great day.
Can I just ask about the Balaturim on that word?
Misnabim.
Is that on Qumish? That
Balaturim? Yeah, right here in Parshas Balos. I don't have it in front of me, but if you get me the red...
I love the Balaturim. He's got some fantastic...
Oh, shoot.
You know, you would have thought you had a computer.